Hi, I'm Laura Massey. I'm 34 and I live in Detroit. I was a January baby. And so far I've lost 29 pounds as of this morning, down another two. So, and that's after basically maintaining through April and May with a whole lot of thought work in there. My current relationship with urges and overeats are that there are some that I've learned to handle pretty deftly. Like I kind of am like, no, not today. And then, you know, there's still wine. So there are still lots of things to work on.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lori Hellcat Bamford. Most of you know me as Hellcat. And I joined PNP in January of 2018. And I have lost 25 pounds. It has not been a straight line down. It's been down, up, down, up. But I'm definitely heading in the right direction and I'm exactly where I need to be. My current relationship with urges and overeating today, when I try to think of, you know, what does that look like today, the one word that comes to my mind is hope. For the first time in my adult life, I feel like I am in actual recovery from my disordered eating. And for me, that disordered eating is binge eating. The course this month has literally changed my life. From the first time I started listening and reading, and Corinne had mentioned Brain Over Binge by Katherine Hansen, I bought the audiobook and listened to it. I didn't listen to it in the car because I immediately knew I was going to have to take notes on it. And so I took notes like my life depended on it. I then went back over my notes with a highlighter. And then now I have moved on to the guide. And so that in conjunction with Corinne's coursework and the calls, something has clicked. And those five steps that they teach has absolutely helped me dismiss so many urges to binge and to overeat.
Hi, I'm Missy. I'm 52 years old, and I am from Ohio, where I was born and raised. I found the tribe in February of 2017 and decided to become an official member in October of 2017. Since that time, I have lost over 150 pounds, and I have reached my goal weight for the first time since I was in my 20s.
Hey ladies, my name is Tanya. I joined the tribe in May of 2018. I've lost 60 pounds. My current relationship with food urges and overeats is like having a daily debate with my future self. I say that because each day brings on a new set of urges. And prior to PNP, I just ate my way through them. Now I've learned how to deal with them by doing the thought work, which is critical to any success that you're going to have in any aspect in the PNP.
Hello, PNP Tribe. My name is Tara Champney. I am from Boston, Massachusetts. I am 43 years old, happily married, and have three awesome kids. I have lost 34 pounds since starting PNP Tribe in January. When I tried to fight the urge by white-knuckling my way through it, it felt horrible. I felt anxious. I felt ashamed. I thought, like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I just be a normal eater? Why can't I just be a normal drinker? I thought there was something wrong with me, and I was just caught in such a shame cycle, and it felt like the only way that I could ever get through it was just to give in to the urge, just to shut those thoughts up. So I would give in, and I would open up a bottle of wine, and I would overeat, and just have it the F it attitude, and I was just ending up shutting myself away from my family and from my life by numbing myself, you know, numbing my true self with wine and overeating and food and just feeling so ashamed all the time.
When I'm white knuckling through an urge, I feel like I'm being punished. I feel like this isn't fair. I just want to eat what I want to eat. It feels like it's not just a choice. It feels so hard.
When I white-knuckled an urge, it feels like it's overwhelming. Like I have no control. But I do. I didn't quite realize that until PMP and through doing the thought downloads, which are critical to my weight loss, and not just my weight loss, but my mental loss. Like, I've probably lost more mental weight than I've lost weight. And that's huge for me because I didn't open up. I didn't share. I was always closed off because I didn't feel I was good enough. And so I always hid behind food. I was always the girl that'd be like, I'm just going to, I got this. I would always stay in the corner. I wouldn't talk. I didn't have a voice, or I wouldn't allow myself to have a voice, because I always ate my way through my feelings because I didn't feel like I was enough, which is interesting because that's my word of the year, because I am enough. But I didn't realize that until I started doing the thought downloads, the recovery worksheets, and just doing the assessments. And why did I make this decision? Why did I do this? Why did I choose to not have my back today? And you know what? At the end of every recovery worksheet or every thought download, it was because I never thought I was enough. And I look at myself and I look how successful I am, and I'm like, yes, you are enough. But whenever I would not think that, it would be food I would go to and be like, I just, you know, just eat. And that's not the healthy way. And 60 pounds lighter, but more mental weight more than anything. And the growth that I see of myself in the mirror is huge. So always give yourself or show yourself some grace, because you're just one decision away from making another one. And the next one, you always learn when you do a recovery worksheet. It's the most empowering thing to do whenever you are trying to figure out why you're overeating or why you're white knuckling. Why are you choosing food instead of sitting with your feelings?
When I'm white knuckling with an urge, it feels a lot more panicky. It feels like I'm not confident in my ability to sit with it. And that's why I think it feels panicky. An urge is an urge, 100%. But I think your confidence in your ability to sit with it, or it just feeling totally out of control, has more to do with the thought work that you do outside of the time when you're in the urge. I think, you know, doing the 90-second countdown is... you know, it helps burn off a lot of that cortisol that gives you the panicky feeling. But when I feel like I have that, I can't resist this kind of knot in the pit of my stomach, it's because either I've been really unrealistic and I've set myself up by feeling deprived, or like I haven't addressed the real issue that is the thought that triggered the urge, and my subconscious brain knows that whatever we're telling ourselves to try to get through this is not addressing that underlying issue. So like, you know, if you tell yourself, I'm not going to have 3 glasses of wine at dinner tonight, I'm going to have 1 because 3 doesn't help us get to our goal. You know, that's a very reasonable thought to have. But if the reason that, you know, if you get to the table and you hate your family and that's why you want 3 glasses of wine instead of 1, you know, this doesn't help me get to my goal, is not going to address the thought that triggers the urge being I hate my family. So that's where you got to do the work when you're not in the middle of the urge. And so I usually think of white knuckling and having an urge that you can sit with that's still uncomfortable but not so panicky as being about my confidence level in the thought work that I've done around it and me knowing the reasons why I'm sitting with the urge and not just giving into it, or why I want to change it to begin with.
When I am white knuckling an urge to either binge or to overeat, if I'm white knuckling, it feels like a fight. And it's like the fight of my life. and it's exhausting. When I'm white knuckling, it's an argument. It's trying to talk nice to it, trying to talk mean to it, being afraid of it. You know, when I would feel that urge come on, it'd be like, oh, well, there it is. Oh, here it is. Yep. You know, and it was just like a dread, and it was a desperate being in a despair of, well, it's here. What am I going to do? You know, and most of the time I wouldn't have the fight in me. And so that's what white knuckling the urge felt like to me.
When I'm sitting with an urge versus white knuckling through it, I feel like it's a choice. I feel like I know I'm doing this temporarily, a little bit of discomfort, because I have goals. I have things that I've planned and I want to stick to. So it makes me feel really good because I feel like I'm in control.
When I'm sitting with an urge, it feels empowering because I have my future self right in front of me. Like, you've got this. I'm my biggest cheerleader when I'm in the corner by myself. I also know whenever I have an urge and I'm sitting in it, I'm denying an urge, I write it down. Because at the end of the day, when I'm doing my assessment, or at the end of the week when I'm doing my hello scale, I can go back and look, oh my God, look what I did. Like, instead of like the highlight reel of all the things that I didn't do right, like, oh my God, I had my back today. You know, you did this, you had this, you know, you worked through whatever you were working through. You chose to write about your feelings. And that each time I sit with an urge, I get stronger. And for those times that I don't make it, and I actually give in to the urge, I don't miss that opportunity to capture why. And that's the beauty in doing the recovery worksheets and doing the thought downloads and digging deeper. And I'll tell you, when you first start, it's not easy. It's not at all. But if you're willing to invest in yourself, because I am, I'm ready for a new, healthier, skinnier version of myself. And I'm on my way there. But with each urge, or each urge that I gave into, white knuckle, I learned something. And I learned that I am worth more than that food that was not on my plan. So, don't give up.
When I'm sitting with an urge, it's not comfortable. It's not pleasant. I wouldn't choose to be sitting with it. But it's not really the end of the world. I don't feel panicky about it. You're just kind of like, yeah, it would be great if we lived in a world where, you know, all carrot cake was gluten-free, didn't have raisins, and had zero calories. Like, that would be great, but that's not reality, so we're not doing this right now. I kind of was thinking about it, and it's like one of those things that you hate doing but you know is good for you. So, like getting a pap smear, like, it's not fun. It's not pleasant. You wouldn't choose to do that with your spare time. But it's not like the end of the world, and you just kind of, you know, you expect that part of adult life is doing things you're not jazzed about, but, you know, it gets you to your greater goal of being healthy or whatever. And so, you know, you therefore put up with it.
When I am sitting through an urge, it feels much different and much more bearable than white knuckling my way through an urge. It feels just like a normal everyday thing. It feels exactly what it is. It's just a thought that pops up. Like, hey, look, it's cake. Or, wow, what a day. We should grab a bottle of wine. It's just a thought that I can recognize. And sitting with it is so much better than white knuckling, because I'm aware of the thought now. And I know it's normal. I can take a moment to just breathe and remind myself of my goals. That it's, you know, that it's not on my plan today. But, you know, it's not on my plan today, but I can always, you know, have it tomorrow. That it's not the end of the world that I don't get to have, you know, whatever the urge or the craving is. And it just, it passes so quickly when I'm not fighting it.
Now, when I am sitting with the urge, it doesn't feel like, oh, we're just going to sit here on our pillow and drink some coffee and just kind of hang out with our urge. No, it's not like that at all. For me, it's a matter of awareness versus giving it attention. And I know Corinne's talked about this, and I know Catherine, I think, talked about it in the book or heard it on the podcast or something. I think it was a podcast. And to just be aware that it's there, I instantly call it out for the meaningless neurological junk that it is. It has no power over whether I act or not. I do not give it attention. So that's what I mean by awareness versus attention. I'm aware it's there. I see you. I see you, boo. But I'm not going to give you more attention than you deserve. Because when you give it attention, that's reinforcing that brain pattern that you have developed that is causing your urges to binge or to overeat. And for me, the reason, and again, I don't really think the reason or the history matters at this point, but as I began to learn these concepts, I looked back, and for me, where those came from was because of my crazy dieting history. I lost 80 pounds in 14 weeks. That's not normal. Hence, it came all back. So, and I have my whole adult history of doing that, of these erratic diets of deprivation. And so it stirred up the survival instincts in my brain. So anytime I was trying to do anything that seemed like restrictive, I was getting those urges to binge, but I didn't know what they were. I thought there was something wrong with me. So when I sit with the urge, it's just a matter of awareness. I'm not giving it attention. It's just neurological junk that is meaningless and has no power to make me act. Then I go into the five steps. So I'm sitting with it, neurological junk. Step two, I separate my higher brain from it. And for me, what's working is the 90 seconds. I count down from 90 seconds. That gives my frontal cortex brain a chance to realize that it's just neurological junk. I then stop reacting to it. I don't get emotional about it. I don't get all dramatic. I don't think that there's something wrong with me. I just am aware of it and don't give it attention. Step four, I don't act on it. And that's where the practice comes in. And then step five, my favorite, I get excited. And I insanely congratulate myself every single time that I'm able to dismiss that urge. It's just reinforcing in my brain. It's like with a child, you know, we give them all sorts of praise for every little thing that they do because we want to reinforce that behavior. And that is exactly what I'm doing with my brain. Urges used to scare me or worry me, but now what I understand is they have absolutely no power over my choice to act. It is my lower brain. It is not my higher brain. It is not my true self. And I'm not going to fight or argue with it anymore. So there's no reason to be scared of it. I'm no longer trying to find some dark, hidden, secret crisis for why it's happening, or there must be some hidden, you know, something wrong with me. Like, I don't do any of that anymore because all it does is reinforce it. So, and I'm not scared of it because I'm not thinking those things either. So I'm not looking for some magical thought to distract me. I'm not looking for some magical list of things to do to get away from it. I'm simply aware and I don't act on it. That's not scary. That's just being a grown-ass woman.
Urges used to scare or worry me, but now what I understand, I think the biggest thing that I understand is that I've given up a lot of that perfectionistic thinking, and people always use that like it's this good thing to have. Perfectionism is cowardice. It's avoiding starting anything in life until you are sure that you can do it right. And it's a way that you end up sitting on the couch for a lot of life. So That used to be something that I was proud of, that I either wanted to do things perfectly or that it was a complete failure. And the work that I've done in the last couple of months on urges has really helped me get past that and helped me realize that the real work is in the times where you sit with it and then fail. Or, you know, maybe you sit with it, but you're conscious of what worked. In surgery, we have a rule that we would much rather people get a question wrong and then understand why for the rest of their life that it was wrong than get something right by accident and learn nothing. Because then you don't have any evidence or understanding of why something worked in a certain situation or how you could use it or apply it in a different situation. And so I think consciousness of what you're thinking and feeling as you sit with an urge and realizing that it can't hurt you, it's just your thoughts, it's just your biological, you know, chemistry doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to feel urgent. We used to not have food around. Of course you were supposed to want to eat everything in sight when you had stuff in sight because you didn't know when you were going to eat again. You know, understanding that your brain's just doing what it was supposed to do and was designed to do, I think gives you a lot more compassion with yourself and allows you to say, oh, that's just a habit loop and now we're working on a new one. Whenever it doesn't feel so urgent. And then when it does, just recognizing that, you know what, I have a lot more work to do on this and I have to be compassionate and I have to take it slow and I have to be brave enough to start uncovering the thoughts that are leading to this urge. It's nothing to be scared of. It's just a matter of deciding to live a conscious life. And that's what everyone is in PNP for. So.
Urges used to scare me because I didn't want to face my feelings. I would choose food. I didn't want to do the hard things like, why are you wanting to eat? Why are you choosing to do this? You know, to dig deep. That's where the real work is when you take the time to invest in yourself. And I am. I do it every day. You have to do that. You won't be successful without doing the thought work to do it. I say that because I visualize myself since last camp. I did the race. I did a half marathon. I didn't think I'd ever do that. The girl 20 years ago wouldn't have done that. The girl today does it because she is strong enough. And she believes in herself. So all those negative thoughts that I used to tell myself that I couldn't do things and I chose to overeat and I couldn't overcome my past, I can. I can through my paper and through my pen. My pen is my biggest feature. I write it down. And if I don't want anyone to see it, which I don't, I tear it up at the end of the month. It's only me that's got to see it. But I do have a great accountability group that I go to when I need the support, when I need something outside of just my thought downloads. And that's huge. So, ladies, if you don't have an accountability group, it's really life-changing.
Urges used to scare me. I used to think that there was something wrong, like, if I was really wanting to reach my goals, I shouldn't be thinking about having food off plan. But once I realized that it was nothing more than a feeling that stemmed from me having a thought, like, ooh, ice cream sounds good, and then I knew that it would pass, it was just temporary, I realized that I could just sit through the discomfort, remind myself of my plans and goals, and that it would pass, and then I could go on with my day. They're not so scary anymore.
Urges used to scare me, but they don't anymore. I now understand that they're normal. It's just my brain's reaction from all the years that I would give in to urges that I've created these urges. I now understand there's nothing wrong and that I'll be okay and that urges won't kill me.
My best tips for not eating at night are that I have a 24-hour plan in place. I have a protocol in place as well for not eating after 7 I don't like the way it makes my body feel when I eat after 7. And I do have in place, like, if I am still hungry, that I grab a bottle of water. And then I add something a little heavier to my day the next day, but I don't eat. Because when I do eat, it just makes me feel yucky.
My best tips for not eating or drinking at night is to make a plan and stick to it. I like to be done eating, my kitchen cleaned, and kitchen shut down for the night by 7 p.m. I then can take time for myself and wash my face, put on my pajamas, brush my teeth, and go to bed. I found that sitting through urges, what I really wanted, all those times that I was overeating and drinking, what I really, really wanted was some time to be resting. And I was tired. I just wanted sleep. But I felt guilty by going to bed early. So I would fight that urge and, you know, go into another urge of overeating and drinking. So now I understand that I was just tired. So that's my biggest tip for night eating, is just to recognize, you know, what is it that you really want. For me, it was rest. It was time for myself.
My best tip for staying on plan at night is to plan. Always, always plan your day. Look at what your day is going to be like. Make that plan and stick to it. And if you consistently find that you're truly hungry, that it's not just an urge, that you're truly hungry in the evening, then adjust your meals. Add some protein, add some healthy fats, and then focus on something else. Say you're sitting there and every night your husband has chips and cheese or something sweet like mine does, then focus on the conversation or maybe the movie you're watching. And then, like for me, I feel like it's self-care if I sit there with a cup of hot tea and just relax and unwind that way. That way it makes me feel better about my evening and I'm not turning to food.
My best tips for not eating at night are visualizing and verbalizing, and then acting. So for me, that is my witching hour, night eating. That is the most times that I would binge, between the hours of 4 and 8 p.m. And I have a 45-minute commute home. So I spend that time visualizing what I'm going to do when I get home. I also become highly aware of things that may be going on when I get home. I have 2 teenage children. I have a husband. And, you know, you get home, you got bills, you got the kids. And this is after having a full-time, all-day job, right? And so I just mentally prepare myself and visualize what I'm going to do when I get there. I'm going to take 5 minutes and take a break and refocus. I am going to be aware that my lower brain is going to start sending up the urges because kids are going to be coming at me with 15,000 questions. And I just become aware of that. So I visualize it and then I talk to myself. Yeah, I'm the crazy lady in the car talking to herself about what's going to go down when we get home. So for me, I visualize it, I verbalize it, and then I follow through like the grown-ass woman that I am. That's it.
My best tips for not eating at night. I've never really been a huge nighttime eater. Sometimes, you know, if I'm drinking, then I'll eat because, you know, you just think it and so you do it. But my best tips for not eating at night is to not be deprived all day. That's when I've really overeaten in the past, is when I felt like, you know, on Whole30 and some of these things where you're like, you know, you've had like 3 pieces of lettuce and a meatball or something, and then you're, you know, you just go nuts on the dried fruit or whatever at night. So I think when I have eaten at night too, it's often been about avoidance. And so I think, you know, consciously saying, okay, I'm eating here, but I'm eating because I'm avoiding something. So let's figure out what that is. And then doing that work when you're not in the middle of an urge, so that you can then have that, you know, conscious awareness the next time, I think is really valuable.
My best tip for staying on plan on the weekend is to remind yourself that if you really want to lose weight, there's no way that you're going to spend 2.5 days eating off plan, overeating, if you really want to lose. You have got to plan those days, as far as your hunger is concerned, just like any other day of the week. Just because it's the weekend is no excuse to eat off plan all the time. Not every weekend's a special occasion. Not every meal has to be special. If you're going out with your family and friends, you don't need to eat out of the bread basket. You don't need to eat an appetizer. You don't need to have a dessert. You don't need to have a drink to be able to socialize and have a good time. You need to remind yourself that those days count just like the days during the week do, and you need to plan them and reevaluate your plan if you struggle. Figure out a way that you can do it for you. Quit using the excuses and plan those weekends.
My best tips for having an on-plan weekend is to make a realistic plan for the weekend and allow for exceptions. Allow for desserts. Allow for wine. Allow for French fries or whatever it is that you know you've been thinking about all week. Just plan for it on the weekend. And I follow my hunger scale and I stick to the other basics. I get my water in. I get my sleep in, and I follow the almighty 24-hour plan. That's how I get through the weekends, and I love to have success. I love to get up on a Monday morning and weigh in and see that I've had a loss, or even if I've maintained over the weekend. I love when I hold myself accountable all weekend, and I get that. That's like my reward. Is a nice weigh-in on Monday.
My best tips for having an on-plan weekend, what has been working for me is I do my weekend plans on Thursdays. So usually when I do my weekly plan on Sundays, and I just, many times I'm not going to know for sure what the weekend holds until it gets closer to the weekend. So I just wait and do that planning on Thursdays. And so I try to stay as close within my weekly plan protocol as possible, though it's not required. But I will tell you, on the weekends, I spend a lot more time in self-care. I have been speaking insanely lovingly to myself. And I say insanely because it feels uncomfortable. It's weird. It's weird to keep telling myself, oh my God, you're amazing. Look what you did. You are kicking ass. Holy crap. Oh my God, your hair's on point. Look at your skin because you're so hydrated. I'm a well-hydrated bitch. So I just spend a lot of time, especially on the weekends, lovingly talking to myself, doing things that are lovingly, bought myself flowers, and just I do those kind of things on the weekend. And I also, I get excited about my recovery, and I track every single success. I spend a lot of time, I do that during the week too, but I really focus on that on the weekend, and I don't allow any excuses. I don't let it be, well, I've got, you know, the kids are going here and we're going there. I don't care where you are and what's going on. You can always control what's going to go in your mouth and how, whether or not you're going to respond to an urge to binge or to overeat. That is within your power completely.
My best tips for having an on-plan weekend are that realizing it's a third of your week. If you include Friday night dinner, it's 7 out of 21 meals you're going to have all week. And just being honest with yourself, you can't expect to make progress if you're blowing it a third of the week. I think that doesn't mean you can't have fun and your weekend can't be different from the rest of your week. But I think you have to just be conscious and plan and be aware of what you're doing. You know, there's plenty of space and plenty of room in 21 meals a week or 84 meals a month for a special occasion, for a glass of wine, for whatever you want to plan for. But you have to realize that having a Saturday night dinner out doesn't mean that you also blow all of Saturday and all of Sunday. I'm a tough love junkie. So, you know, what I kind of wrote here in preparation for this is learning to grow up. You know, you are responsible for whatever you choose to do and whatever you see as an obstacle, you know, driving the kids around, not knowing where your friends are going to want to eat, you know, being on vacation, whatever obstacle you use as an excuse, if you really look at how you can solve that, that's your solution. That's the path to the next 5 pounds. You know, deprivation and just white knuckling is not a solution because it will always backfire. But just be, you know, really creative and curious and problem solving oriented about how you can make these obstacles that come up over and over again in life, just part of your plan and part of, you know, and come up with a solution that will work in your life because everyone has different challenges.
So my best tips for having a on-plan weekend, well, it starts with a realistic plan. Every weekend is different. You have to assess, but your two stays the same. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if you didn't plan on going to dinner, if you had company come in from out of town, your two goes everywhere with you. And always being future focused, making sure that your goals are right there in the front and center of every decision you make. And that's how I live. That's how I've lost 60 pounds. That's how I can go and say, I don't want this chips and salsa today, I'll pass. And that's how I did it on my cruise, because I was future focused. And I'm pretty proud of her.
My best tip for getting through your witching hour is just be ready for it. Make a plan and stick to it. I like to drink tea at, you know, right when my normal witching hour starts. For me, it's 4 to 7 are my witching hours. I also meal prep. I make myself one dinner, and that's my dinner that I eat Monday through Thursday. So I don't have to, you know, have that another stress in my life of what's for dinner and trying to cook. And but it, while I am cooking, my little ones don't want to eat, you know, what the healthy kale salad that I eat all week, because I'm okay with my kids eating what they like to eat. You know, they want to eat, you know, chicken strips or mac and cheese, and I'm okay with that. But right now, that's what they want to eat, and I know what I want to eat, and I don't allow for the fight during the witching hours or the stress, the added stress of guessing what meal is. I also like to have Corinne in my ear, or I also like Rachel Hart, Pat podcast from Rachel Hart, and Brooke. Now, I listen to her, and I like to have them in my ear while I'm cooking their dinner, and just to kind of, you know, guide me through the next, through the witching hour. And I also allow myself to take breaks and give myself a few minutes, and I allow myself to lay down and meditate for a few minutes and just really remind myself of my goals.
My tips for making it through the witching hours: A, be aware that they are coming, and have your compelling reasons, have your power thoughts with you, whether it be with your cell phone, post-it notes in your car, or at work. That's where I have mine. That way I can go to those when I need them. I also have my bottle of water and a fruit. I choose apples because they travel very well. And I have my accountability group that I go to. And I've picked up the phone and called my best friend and says, I'm eating this, or I'm about to do this. And they will stop and be like, okay, what are you feeling? And just be open. You know, don't be afraid to reach out, because that's what's made me successful, is by reaching out.
For me, my witching hour is while I'm cooking dinner. I will be throwing some cheese on a salad and pop some in my mouth. Or I'll be putting some nuts on a sweet potato and throw some in my mouth. And I would justify it by saying, well, it's on the plan because it's part of my dinner. But I wasn't sitting down to eat dinner yet. So I was throwing all these extra things in my mouth, and I decided I needed to start treating them like an off-plan eat. If I reacted to the urge to eat while I was cooking, I had to do a recovery worksheet. Once I realized that I was just acting like a spoiled toddler, the one that comes in and begs for a cookie 5 minutes before the meal, and then when mom tells him no, he throws a temper tantrum, I decided, you know what? I can wait for my meal. I'll do what I planned.
My best tips for making it through your witching hour are, I guess if you have a witching hour, it means you have a process problem, right? If you have the same time of day thing come up, then it's a process problem. Do a pattern interrupt, put the stickies up like Corinne says, you know, change your routine, go for a walk, and then ultimately the answer for everything, I think, is to TDL. You know, TDL about what you've tried that worked, what hasn't worked. For me, I think a huge hack has been not just like writing, like I did this today, but writing, you know, what 10 things am I making this mean? Or what 10 things am I afraid of if this works or doesn't work? Or, you know, Corinne gives these little, she'll give these little assignments out all the time in coaching calls. And if you just apply that paradigm, you know, the first three things you're always like, yeah, I already know those. Those are what's rattling around in my brain. That's, it's not going to get me to my goals. That's, you know, I want to look good in, you know, a swimsuit or whatever. Those are the obvious ones. It's the, you know, 4 through 7 will start to be a little bit more revealing, a little bit deeper. And then 8, 9, and 10 is where all the work is. That's, you know, this is about my self-worth, or, you know, I wouldn't be so lonely, or whatever it is. Like, those are where the work is. And when you realize that, you know, you've been making eating goldfish mean that you won't feel lonely, then it's a lot easier to sit with that urge, you know, and recognize how ridiculous that is. As a solution. And then, you know, then you won't be using, you know, this doesn't help me get to my goals as, you know, an answer for I feel lonely. Like, you know what I mean? You can get to work on the real issue. So I would say, you know, as much as a lot of people resist doing the TDLs, that's where the massive change happens. That's where you, I think that's where, for me, it has been easy to start leveling up in ways. That's where you make that shift, where things that you thought you were going to cling to, like Taco Bell or even wine, start to lose their grip a little bit because you recognize you're doing the mental work of the story you tell yourself not being so true. And so it doesn't mean that you don't then have the urge for, you know, goldfish or wine. It just means that when it comes up, you're like a lot more capable and confident in your ability to say, no brain, that doesn't help us, you know, be less lonely, or, you know, whatever it is. But you're at least, you're a lot more equipped, I think.
All right. My best tips for making it through the witching hour. Like I said, my witching hour is 4 to 8 p.m. and I visualize, verbalize, and then I act. So the 90-second countdown has been a lifesaver for me. It gives my higher brain a chance to kick in. Sometimes I have to do the countdown 2 and 3 times. But I tell myself, this is neurological junk. I'm aware of it. I'm not engaging in it. I ain't gonna make it a big drama. We're not gonna have a scene. No scenes. Because that's gonna give it more power than it deserves. And then I'm gonna act. And I'm gonna practice. I've had 2 binges since I started doing this. And that is phenomenal. I didn't realize how much I was binging. I was characterizing my overeats as just overeats when most of the time a lot of those were binges. And so I really turned my focus into my binge eating, my disordered eating, and the overeating has just fallen into place naturally. So it's almost like once I switched my focus to the binge eating and to take that shame away from it and to verbalize it and write down, yeah, I've got a binge eating disorder, and here's why. Because I've had a lifetime of restrictive dieting. And so, of course, my brain's going to be wired that way. So once I could remove the shame and the guilt from that, it was just like a light bulb moment. And it was like, okay, this is what it is. Now I know how to fix it. There's not some deep-seated secret reason. And it's nothing to beat myself up over for. It's just simply that how my brain has responded. The other thing that I do is I completely change the way I speak to myself. I have completely changed the story that I told myself. I looked back over the last 90 days, as was suggested in the podcast, and the one thought that kept coming up as I would set these goals and they would be tied to a race or an event, and I wanted to weigh a certain point by that event, and then it wouldn't happen. And the constant thought and what I was verbalizing was, well, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I'm not where I'm supposed to be. Well, guess what? I wasn't where I was supposed to be. Your result is going to prove what you're saying and what you're thinking. So I totally changed the thought. My thought has now been this month, this weight is melting off. This weight is melting off. This weight is melting off. And guess what? The fucking weight is melting off. Last week, almost 9 pounds. This week, almost 5 pounds. And I've had 2 binges. It's incredible. So Be careful of the story you're telling yourself. I want to leave you with this. All of this has been going on and happening during an emotional time for me. Father's Day, my dad passed away in October, so this was a tough one. And then I learned Monday that my nephew of 26 years old died from an overdose. He was addicted to huffing. And if I can have this level of success during this extremely painful time and grieving, then this just proves that responding to urges has nothing to do with your circumstances. Nothing to do with your circumstances. It's all just neurological junk, and you make the choice and the decision on what you want to do when those urges come up. And don't use excuses of your life, or you're sad, or you're grieving, or, you know, your life is a mess. That's not an excuse. That has nothing to do with it. So I hope that you have what I have had this last month because of this course. I've had the clarity to change, the hope to heal, and the pull to move forward. I encourage you all to find an accountability group. Shout out to my P10 and my new accountability soul sister, Laura Gary. Thank you guys so much.